Fandomtastic Podcast, where we believe that through books and banter, all is possible. I'm Steph, aka Ideally Inspired Reviews, joined by...
I'm Ava of Kingdom of Mass on Instagram.
In today's episode, we are covering my favorite of all time. Just kidding. But I think my favorite of the entire series and quite possibly my favorite Sarah J. Maas book ever. Air of Fire, or as I call it, Air of My Loins.
Oh my God.
Air of My Pants. Wow. Air of My Bedroom.
All right.
Air of Fire. Okay, so sorry. Okay. Anywho.
Where do we go from there? Okay.
This is basically going to be my Zaddy's Day Solstice episode, like Ava, where she had her full Tarquin freak out sesh episode. This is going to be Stephanie's Zaddy episode. It was a good day, though. I mean, I always knew the depth of your desire for Tarquin, but...
No, it really is just... deep. Like, it is, like, Mariana really Trench deep. Deep. Like...
Jesus.
Yeah, listen. Oh, man. There are so many, like, crevice and trench and, like, depth jokes that I want to make right now, but, like, I'm going to abstain. We're going to stick to the script.
Ish.
Where, so, I feel like we might as well just get straight to the point. When did we fall in love with Rowan, and why was it the first time that he appears?
I mean, listen, basically, Rowan is, like, everything I love in a man character. Listen, I feel like any time that your first, like, introduction into the story or on the page involves you, like, lurking in the shadows, being all rude and broody,
judgmental,
immediately going to ensnare my heart. So yeah, basically from, like, before we even knew his name, I was in love with him. So
he just literally emerges from the shadows in Greece to basically tell Aelin that she is a dumb, like,
yeah,
literally, exactly. Like, that's, he just
came,
like,
to hurl insults,
like,
not mince words, just straight from the heart, from the soul. That is my favorite.
And I love it because he's not even trying to, like, provoke her or get a reaction out of her. He legitimately just, like, is totally unimpressed and wants her to know. Like, he doesn't care what she does with that information. He's just...
You know what I feel like he's like? I feel like his attitude, especially early on with Aelin, regardless of prejudice and all that stuff, I feel like his attitude is very comparable to, like, when you're working, like, retail and you have to train somebody new and you're just like, ugh.
Like, I feel like... Let me just asterisk that with... When you're working, period, and you have to train someone.
But to be honest, I mean, I feel like retail is, like, the pits of hell. Sorry to anybody
absolutely.
Who works it and actually thoroughly enjoys it. But, like, I did not have one retail job that I could be like, you know what, I could do this for the rest of my life.
You know, I think it's a toss-up between retail and the food industry.
Oh,
so basically,
true.
Like, the service industry in general.
True. I'll give you that.
Which I guess Rowan is... Like, in the service industry. Blood servicing.
Oh, dear.
Going to hell. He's basically a slave. Okay.
Yeah, ew. Okay. But that being said, that's what I feel like his act. Because I think that there's always...
Totally.
For anybody who's new to the series right now, like, one of the biggest, like... matters of contention, I think, when it comes to Rowan's character... They're the people who do not like his character at all or don't like him in his position, I guess, in the story. Like, they tend to, like, talk about how he treats people, like how he treated especially Aelin. And I mean, while I understand it, I feel like it takes one to know one. So therefore, I am one and I know that. So like, again, two peas in a pod forever and ever going to hell together in a handbasket, Rowan and I. And that's fine. I've accepted it. And so, you know, is he. So,
so is fine. He.
Yeah, it's fine.
You know who Rowan reminds me of?
Who, Ava?
Okay, before you, I'm not actually going to say Tarquin, but do you watch The Office, or are you familiar with The Office? Okay.
He reminds me. If you say Dwight, I'm going to punch you in the throat.
No. He reminds me of, at least in like beginning Air of Fire, like the first part, he reminds me of Angela. Like, unimpressed by management, unimpressed by coworkers, just cares about. Like virtually nothing. I guess like if his weapons were Angela's cats, then that's what he cares about. But like, that's it.
But so does that make Aelin and then, Dwight? Like,
yes.
This is taking a turn. Anyways, let's please not before I lose my libido.
Wait, oh my God. No, but that makes 80 and that makes 80 and Mo.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, geez. Oh, God.
Because of Rose, who lives under the porch.
Oh, my God. Oh, this is bad. This is taking it. Who's Stanley?
That's probably Lorcan,
I would say. Oh, totally Lorcan. Okay, anyway, sorry. Okay.
All right.
We're getting ahead of ourselves. For those who are noobs, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Anyways, okay, so for you, when did you fall in love with Rowan's character? Respectfully fall in love with him because he's mine and solely mine.
Respectfully fall in love with him. I have to say, so I mean, I was like immediately intrigued by him for sure. But I know that this is controversial because a lot of people hate this scene, but this was the scene where I was like, oh wait, he just like leans into being a dick, but in a way that I was like super into. And that is the scene where he's like, fuck this, like Aelin is giving him nothing. And so he just bites her and that like wakes her up. And like, I get that a lot of people don't like that scene and whatnot, but I honestly love it because he was so unapologetic about it and he like did it for the right reasons. Like, he wasn't trying to make a claim on her. He was just trying to piss her off.
I wonder if I can get away with that if I just bite somebody. I did it for the right reasons. It's fine. My intentions were there.
I dare you now.
I'm going to bite Ernie. Anyway, sorry.
But that scene and like the fact that it comes back kind of, and that's something that gets like discussed between the two of them. There are so many moments, but I think the moment where he sees her scars for the first time and like realizes how being such a dick must have had an effect on her. And he kind of has that moment of remorse. And I think it's probably like the first time that Rowan has felt remorse in like some hundreds of years.
Yeah.
And so just like knowing that they can have that effect on each other, like they can seriously piss each other off, but then also seriously like ground each other. I think sets the tone for their entire relationship going forward, which I really like. I really like it when, strong relationships start off with that I can't stand you but now we're friends. Like, I think that having
so enemies to friends to lovers,
sure, but they're not lovers in Air of Fire.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, I feel like relationship, when I hear relationship, that's what I think. Like, I'm thinking, well, already like with my pants and not at all like,
well, I think we platonically all
but I will say,
as soon as Rowan walked on, then we were all like, oh, team Rowan.
Well, I will say, okay, so like, just for the sake of full disclosure here, the very first time that I read Air of Fire, like when it first released, again, sadly not back to back, as we read these as they came out, but I remember with Rowan's character in particular. Like, I loved Rowan's character, but I actually wasn't shipping Rowan and Aelin at all. When I say at all, I should say I was intrigued by the possibility, but to be honest, I loved their connection and their, like, their friendship, and the partnership between the two of them. Like, I loved that growth. And yeah, I actually, totally. And I remember, like, when I went to Sarah's, publication tour, when that came out, like, that was actually what I talked to her about. Cause I was just like, you know what? I loved that. Like, it felt like a completely, like, no strings attached, like, no, like, we're not coming into it, like, rebound, you know, both of us on the rebound type of thing. And, like, we gravitate towards each other romantically. It was just like, it just felt like an organic, like, just a very, despite the biting and the punching, healthy ish relationship, at least by the end, friendship between the two of them. And I just really, really dug it. Like, I loved that. So it wasn't honestly, like, immediately like, ooh, you'd be a great, like, love interest maybe, but, like, it was more like, can we just keep you around at all times, please, forever? Thank you.
So sort of to parallel that, like, I definitely jumped onto Team Rowan as soon as they walked onto the page. Mm-hmm. But that being said, I didn't, kind of in the same vein, I didn't feel like I was missing anything when they didn't spark up a romantic relationship in Air of Fire. Like, that,
right.
The foundation of that relationship is so strong and so solid and so, like, it just walks on its own legs. It doesn't need a romantic element to make it that poignant and powerful. So even though I was totally rooting for them, it wasn't one of those things where I was like, this is kind of a, your interactions are a waste of time unless they're, like, romantically charged. Like, it
exactly.
didn't need that. So to a certain extent, yes, absolutely. But also I was definitely, like, aching for them to kiss the whole time.
Well, sure. I mean, of course, because especially towards the end, but honestly, yeah. Like, just like how I've said that House of Earth and Blood feels like it's three books, I felt like Air of Fire was kind of the same situation where I felt like it felt like we were getting so much out of it, which, you know, right. Which is probably the reason why House of Earth and Blood and Air of Fire are, like, my top two faves. Yeah, like, I think because they kind of felt the same. The same thing with mm-hmm. with Crescent City or House of Earth and Blood now. We have to call it now. like, with that, you know, like, the way that the progression between Bryce and Hunt, it kind of started that way where it was, like, antagonistic. Totally. And it literally was one coworker training another coworker in House of Earth and Blood. And again, it's the same situation with Air of Fire. So yeah, I mean, again, now you guys are getting more insight into why Ava and Stephanie are obsessed with both of these books.
Absolutely.
So, anyways,
it's like a virtual through the microphone high five right now.
Right?
We're so in tune. I mean, Sarah has so many books that we could have easily gravitated towards different ones, but we didn't. So mm-hmm. I like your taste, Steph. It's very good taste, I must say.
Until we get to other things and then we hate
each
other.
Like, we will forever love them both, but always stand on opposite sides of the Tarquin-Helion thing.
Yeah, so, but that's okay, respectfully,
with love,
because
yes.
Exactly, we can't both be on the same team there.
True.
But at the same time, it's not like a controversial, like, or not controversial. What is the word? Competitive.
Oh,
thing,
true.
Because technically, Helion and Tarquin are not, you know. It's not like the Night Court and the Spring Court or something.
Right, right.
So, anyways.
Okay, moving on.
Okay, sorry, moving on.
Before we get too derailed. Okay, so this is a fun question. I'm very excited to talk about this. I'm, like, tapping my fingers together like a little villain. Mm-hmm. Except it's not villainous. This isn't a hard question. It's just something I want to chat about. We get to meet several new important characters who pop up, including Adian, Manon, and Sorsha. Which of these characters and their storylines, so like Adian, Kale, the Rebels, Manon and the 13, and Sorsha and Dorian, was our favorite the first time around, and which is our favorite now? So has that stayed the same, or has it shifted?
As I mentioned in the Crown of Midnight episode, witch shit is always going to be what I want. Of course, I can't pretend like I wasn't excited every time Dorian was on the page because, again, Dorian is a favorite. But right. I really loved and still to this day love Manon and all the witch shit that we got in that book. I know that I remember when this book, again, when the book first came out, and at this point, Sarah is still mildly a baby author because all she had was Throne of Glass. I remember that a lot of people, it was like an unpopular opinion to be like, I loved all the witch shit because a lot of people felt bored by it. They felt like it was just like almost like a textbook type of thing. But of course, right. But as, I mean, and of course, for those of you who are new reading it, we would love to hear your opinions on it. But like, once you have a broader understanding of the series and obviously get through the series, you understand the importance of all the witch shit. Which, by the way, we're just going to only refer to it as witch shit now. but yeah, no, I loved the Manon stuff. And even this time around, again, like, ate that shit up. But of course, at the same time, thoroughly loved Dorian stuff. But it's just hard to separate the stuff that was happening in Rifthold. Oh my gosh, I can't say that word. Without thinking about Kale. So like, I didn't care for it. I was like, get me back to the witches or get me back to Wendlin. Like, I don't care about anybody else right now. Sorry, Adian. Sorry, everybody else. So anyways, what about you?
Okay, so for the first time that I read Air of Fire, I was definitely also intrigued by the witches because when we first get Manon's chapter, I legitimately, like, I was like, did I miss something in, like, Crown of Midnight and, like, Throne of... I was like, were my copies defective? Like, who is this person? And, you know, obviously when you get through her chapters, like, she's developed really well. She's set up as a very interesting character. Her relationship with her grandmother in the 13 and Abraxos is really interesting because we're seeing all of these different sides of Manon kind of interact and clash, I think. Mm-hmm. And so you can kind of see how she's set up for future conflict, which I really enjoyed because it made me want to root for her even more. So definitely Manon the first time that I read Air of Fire, but this time, and see, Steph, you're gonna either laugh or scoff. I can't tell. Probably scoff. Yeah. But it was actually Adian, Kale, and the Rebels that really held my interest this time. First of all, because I think that Ren, even though he's
it was probably because of Ren. I knew it was because, like, anytime that Ren was on the page, I was like, oh, Ava's probably loving this.
I just, like, love him so much. And again, like, he's not even a water boy, so who's to really say what it is? But he is just that character who, like, shows up and is really angsty and cranky. And, like, you can tell that he's so badly wants to be part of kind of the group. Like, he's floating, he's a little aimless, and he kind of wants to be friends with, like, the others. And I totally, you know, saw a little bit of Tarquin in him, but obviously with, like, more angst. So, like, if you kind of mashed up, like, Rowan's crankiness and, like, Tarquin's idealism and put them into one emo boy, I think that would be Ren. And so, yeah, I was, like, I was delighted. All of their escapades throughout Rifthold, where he, like, takes them to, like, the opium den, which I was like, okay, well, that's not great. Get some help, my dude.
That's not great.
But I just like those kinds of scenes were, I think they were really fun, and it was a different kind of danger from what was being faced by Aelin and Rowan, which was kind of like a nice change of pace. Like, while they were definitely dealing with monsters in the same way that I think Manon was dealing with monsters, Kale, Adian, and Ren and the rest of the rebels were kind of dealing with more political matters, which I actually find very intriguing. I love politic heavy books. And I think I paid a lot, like, careful attention to Kale in this one. Because you can see in the first half, like, he's such a dick. He's such a dick about it. He's so mad at her. And I'm like, literally, for what? She's done nothing to you yet, essentially. All of your anger stems from reactions that she's had to dumb shit that you've done, sir. So why are you pissed? And then we see Dorian kind of say, like, he has that line where it's, you cannot pick and choose which parts of her to love, which I think is so brilliant. I love that quote so much. And I think it also shows Dorian drawing a line in the sand and kind of saying, like, which side of the world he intends to stand on and, like, not taking any of Kale's shit. And so it's like the entire world is basically telling Kale, you're going to have to pick a side and you'd better pick the right side. And so that was just something that I was much more conscious of this time around. And was he still a dipshit? Absolutely. But Ren was there to kind of like mediate it. So that helped. And this is actually my favorite book that Adian is in. I must admit, I don't like him in any of the rest of the books, but he's quite tolerable in this one. So yeah, I'll say them. Paying attention to the stuff that was going on in Rifthold was pretty fun because it is so different, I think, from the rest of the narratives.
Yeah.
You're like, no, okay.
I'm just like, I am just trying to be as.
No, wait. I won't get friendly.
No, not to you. Like, I just think that no, because Ava and I have talked about this. Ava and I have talked about this off air too. Like, I just genuinely have so much anger towards Kale's character that, like, he literally could have been the savior of the entire series, and I still would be like, Like, I just genuinely don't care for his character at all. And it just gets worse with every reread. So, like, I sit back and I let Ava say these things. And I'm also trying really hard not to alienate actual Kale lovers. Because no disrespect towards y'all. Because everybody, you know, feel what you feel, love who you love, like, whatever. But, like, oh my God, don't really try to have conversations with me about Kale, because it's going to end in me just having, like, yuck face, because I really don't care about him at all. Anyways.
Okay. No, so actually, like, on this subject, I posted. Great. I'm surprised you didn't say anything, but a couple of days ago on Kingdom of Mass, I actually posted a Kale post. The post is, or the person who made this post was like, describe Kale in one sentence. And then the quote that they pulled out from the books was, Kale was too stunned to do anything. and so that was my post 4 days ago. And I got like almost 100 comments of people. And it's funny because so many people are like so divided over him. I don't even know if there's another character who's quite this divisive. Maybe Hunt. People seem to either love him or hate him.
Mm-hmm.
But people were mad, and I'm not gonna. I genuinely believe, though,
that those of us that feel so strongly about Kale are the ones that felt strongly about him years ago when these books came out. And it's just years of pent up aggression that is just fueling the hate towards him. Because I genuinely believe that, like, if you would have asked, when did this book come out? Like 2014 or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you would have asked 2014 me about my feelings about Kale, I wouldn't be as, like, angry about it. Because for fuck's sake, like, for the Tower of Dawn launch event that I did with Sarah, I wore a Cuddles for Kale shirt because I genuinely was like, okay, fine. Like, I'm willing to, you know, concede to at least the Tower of Dawn Kale, right? Like, I'm willing to just accept his character then. But outside of that, like, fuck Kale. And I mean that with all the disrespect in my heart. Fuck Kale for real. But anyways, I do feel that the people that are with me on the dislike of Kale are those of us that have been sitting in this, festering in this since 2014, 2013, Crown of Midnight. So, anyways, all I'm right. Sorry. I'm trying not to make this to be a Kale hate fest, so next.
No. I mean, hey, hate who you want to hate. It's a free country. It's a free world.
That's true, but I just don't want it to be a bummer. Like, I would rather put all of this energy into Rowan or Manon.
I mean, we can move on.
Yeah.
We can step away from Kale. I think the Tower of Dawn episode is going to be very interesting, but we're not there yet. So
moving on.
Okay, let's talk overall favorite scene in the book. Like, if you had to pick one, best scene.
Okay, this is going to come as a shock to many people because it's not explicitly Rowan. But it was anytime that Aelin would refer to Gavriel as kitty cat, his kitty cat friend, or Uncle Kitty Cat. So especially after she finds out, is that in Queen of Shadows?
That's in Queen of Shadows.
Okay, never mind. Whoop, almost spoiled it. Okay, so anyways, but yeah, anytime that she referred to Gavriel as kitty cat, whatever kitty cat was, is the best. And I just love, because I love how, like, I mean, it just feels like you're shooting the shit with your friends, right? Like, you're just totally. Like, totally just like dogging your friends, but it comes from a place of love. And it was almost like she was getting Rowan to lighten up a bit, because he was like such a hard ass. And so I think that that's one of the things that I really loved this book again. And in talking about the platonic growth here with her, because at this point, like, Aelin is going into, like, she's being thrown into this place pretty much against her will in the beginning. Like, I mean, it wasn't it wasn't her decision, to begin with. And she just had a terrible breakup, you know, had all these other things going on with her old job, like all of a sudden she's going and starting her new job with all these new people she doesn't know, and then has to get trained by like a horrible, mean guy.
Terrible management.
Yeah. So terrible management. Jesus. Yes. To say the least. No HR. You're just fucked.
Yeah, exactly. The break room, they make you work in that too.
Jeez. Right? Oh, I know. You gotta clean the fucking dishes. Like, my God. I mean, at least her coworkers in the kitchens were fine. But, like, anyway. Yeah. But just like, her... Because it kind of felt like in The Assassin's Blade, with the assassin in the Red Desert, like, with her and Ansel, like, their relationship being established, and like there were a lot of things that were happening and whatever, but like I just loved that. So anything really with Aelin, like lighthearted moments, there weren't a lot, but any like lighthearted friend, your squad moments were my favorite. But again, Kitty Cat in particular. What about you?
I think that actually like brings up a really good point about why the book worked so well for me, because I think that we have, you know, Kale, who's on one end of the spectrum, where Kale was too stunned to do anything. Like, he just cannot, you know, comprehend the idea that like magic exists and his friend has it. And I'm sorry, my dog is losing his shit for once. Shut up, Luther. He's so loud. Oh my God. Okay. I'm sorry. Anyway, I think it, like, going to Wendlin, going to Dorinel, I think it would have been very easy for Selena, who also, to be fair, doesn't have that much exposure to this new world. I think it would have been really easy for her to become completely overwhelmed by everything, by how new it all is, by the, you know, the sort of magic and monstrosity of the Fae, their culture. Obviously, Maeve sucks, and their first meeting is, like, the worst thing ever. Maeve is just such a bitch. And yet, she always humanizes Rowan and, you know, Gavriel and the rest of his friends in a way that I think I really appreciated, because it kind of let us be surprised and, like, shocked and in awe of other more important things in the series, as opposed to, like, just the Fae, if that makes sense. So that was something that I thought that Sarah did very, very well and definitely enhanced my readership. But in terms of favorite scenes, I loved bits the scene where Rowan's like, I've figured you out. And he takes her up the mountain into this cave where he has chained poor Luca.
Side note, that was actually my second choice, but go ahead.
Okay. Good. See, we're on the same brain cell. So he's chained Luca onto this lake, and I think it's iconic because Rowan is like so smug about it. He's like, I'm the best fucking teacher ever, like best training exercise ever. And then you can just like see his oh shit as he realizes that he's not only put Aelin in the path of this horrifying cave monster, but also Luca, who's like 15 and just wants a snack. Like,
but he was like super excited though.
He was so excited. He was like, oh my god, are we training? What are we doing here? Like, what's going on? He reminds me of, have you ever seen Up, like the Disney movie?
Yeah.
He reminds me of Russell.
Aww,
in that moment, like asking all the questions. Like, he just wants a little badge. He wants to be a participant in what all the big kids are doing. Like, he's just so cute, which... Which I guess makes Rowan the old man, Carl.
Well, if the shoe fits.
Oh my god, I'm sorry.
Okay. Be good. I mean, well, if you think about it, he actually has the same story arc as the old man.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
He really does. And he has white hair too. Oh god. Oh, he's Carl.
He's Carl. Adventure is out there.
Oh. This is traumatizing. Oh. Anyways. But I will say, okay. You know what that scene reminded me of? Like the whole like moment, like once it was all done. It reminds me of that sound on TikTok. If anybody watches TikTok, wow. I'm an old lady. There's this one like sound trend that's going around where it's like, and there was like the best idea I've ever had. And then like cut to somebody else being like, it was the worst idea you've ever had. That is literally like that whole moment in a nutshell where like, he's like, yes, I am going to make her, I'm going to force this out of her basically. And then he's like, oh shit, the ice is cracking. Oh fuck. They're going to, oh shit. There's like a cave creature. Like, oh shit. Like, so much happening.
Literally everything goes wrong.
He's like, whoops. Okay.
Yeah, it was so great. But I also think it's great because it, you know, really does prove that Aelin like draws that line in the sand. I think that's another scene where they really start to fundamentally understand each other when she was like, you can fuck me over however you want.
Because my brain just took off on flight.
I'm sure it did.
Halfway mid through that sentence. Did. Okay. Anyway.
I know what I'm doing. And
sorry.
But you cannot like bring other people into it. Like I won't let one other person be hurt because of me. And I think that that's something that he's so, you know, conscious of, because it's so similar to how we have Nehemia dying and Lyria dying. Like, they parallel each other in such close ways that it almost feels like it would have been impossible. Okay, now Luther is howling, so that's great.
That's Luther howling? I thought those were sirens.
Nope. That's Luther.
Oh my god. Yeah. Wow.
So
okay. Sorry, so Luther everyone. Makes an appearance on this episode. Can't wait. For Cameo once, it's not my dog.
Luther. we'll pretend he's a wolf and it adds to the doornail. It's fine.
Fenris, what are you doing?
Exactly.
Here?
Well, I guess he's more of a Connell. He's very dark.
Oh, that's Connell. Okay, anyways. Lord. Okay, anywho. And all right. Anyway.
Moving on.
Okay.
But yeah, I guess like looking at, you know, Aelin and Rowan, you know, Maeve like clearly put them together because she wanted them to be miserable, but it almost feels like there's no way that they couldn't have walked out of that as friends.
Oh, yeah.
Their stories are so similar. So, yeah. Anyway, that was my favorite scene. Regarding Aelin kind of switching gears, which scene did we feel was like the most heartbreaking for Aelin / Selena?
Oh my god.
If you take mine, I'm going to fight you.
Well, I didn't look at the script to see what yours is, so sorry if I'm taking it. I don't know. I might be. To me, it happens every time. I either tear up or I full on cry every single time
totally
reading this book. And
scene.
I can't even, I don't know, maybe. It's, I'm like, Now I want to look at the script to see what you said.
Don't. Oh my gosh. Maybe I should go first.
No. Because it's too late. I don't think we have the same one. Okay. It was when Aelin is like super sad, which is all the whole time.
The whole book. Like,
when she's super sad and she hears her mom call her Fireheart.
Oh.
And honestly, like it's like so, because like I feel like at that point in the book, she's, you know, basically being shunned. Like she was like literally like looking for a friend. And like Rowan didn't want anything to do with her. And like she didn't feel like she fit in with the other Demi-Fae. And, you know, like I think Rowan had actually like intentionally like hurt her feelings in that moment, because typical Rowan being Rowan, trying to push her away essentially. And she was just like kind of like hitting, like I think she finally just hit that emotional wall, which I think all of us go through at one point or another, where like you try to be like super strong and then finally it's just like, fucking everything is just going wrong today, I'm just gonna go cry about it for 15 minutes and be fine. That was like, yeah. So I think that that's the moment that really, I mean, of course there are so many other heartbreaking moments though. And I will also throw in another moment that makes me kind of weepy is the whatever it is, like with Manon and Abraxos, like when she decides that Abraxos is going to be her wyvern and he like saves her.
Oh, that was so...
And it's like... Like their whole relationship is just like so, like it honestly, like it tugs at the heartstrings throughout the series, like regardless, because like he's such a he's totally opposite of what he should be. Like he's a contradiction. Like he's a wyvern who loves flowers right. and like staring at the stars and butterflies and shit. And right. like, and then of course you've got like Manon, who's like tough as nails, and is mean. And yeah, exactly. Who is paired up with him, and she clearly has a soft spot for him. But like that whole moment where she like is giving him like a pep talk before he's getting his teeth and his barbs installed.
Right.
And she's like, it's going to hurt and I'm really sorry, but you're just gonna deal with it and we're
gonna be
like,
fine.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like my mom dropping me off at the dentist like every time, even now as an adult, like I still make her take me. I'm like, it's too scary in here, mom. I don't want to be here.
I know, like, it's true, it is. But even though she always typically refers to Abraxos as mother hen, but like, but it's so true. Like their relationship is really beautiful too, which is like so weird to say about like a wyvern, but like it's fine. The sweet little baby. But anyways, yes, those are the two moments that make me sad. What about you, Ava? I don't think we have the same scene.
We don't.
Okay, good.
I'm actually pleased. but it's the moment where Aelin confronts the Valg, and it again parallels that scene where she decides to snap at Indovier.
Indovier.
Talked about this too, so I still the fact that I still can't remember is really quite sad. But she knows that she's not going to, or at least she thinks that she's not going to emerge from that darkness, and does it anyway for the sake of people that she doesn't even know that well. She just kind of knows that it's a sacrifice that is worth making. So I'm like, oh, yeah. So I get blubbery there. But specifically the moment where the Valg force her to confront the memories of the night that her parents died. And you see that moment where it's not that her parents died that really, like, crushed her and made her embrace Celaena Sardothian. It's the moment that Marion dies for her, for the sake of this, you know, country, instead of returning to her own husband and child, dies for Aelin. And like, you know, we're finally allowed to see that the reason why Aelin does not want to pick up her mantle as Aelin is because she feels that she's wasted Marion's sacrifice by surviving. Like, all Celaena Sardothian ever did was essentially try to survive, and she feels that she's like such a waste of space and such a waste of life that Marion's sacrifice was for nothing, and that's why she can't bear.
Well,
to
it's survivor's
and...
guilt too. I mean that's the epitome of like the actual definition of survivor's guilt. Like, I mean, basically, I feel like the tagline for the Throne of Glass series should be like, we all need therapy here. Like, everybody literally fucking needs therapy in literally this book. Like, maybe some therapy, a trained professional could help some of these people in this book.
Like, oh. I mean, I literally feel like a trained professional would have their work cut out for them. You need like a team, like a psychiatry team for these poor people. Oh my God.
I know. We need to like ship them off to like a camp where they're all isolated and just like
literally deal with just our like issues. A retreat, yes. A clinic. Oh my God. It's
have a share circle where everybody yeah just goes around and talks about their feelings. Because that's the other thing, too. I feel like a lot of them just have a lot they of pent up.
They just need to get it out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anyways, but yeah, that is sad. Oof.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, just... and that, I mean, in even how it was written, because like I've asked Sarah this before. I'm like, how do you write these things and not like want to like just, you know, melt into a puddle of tears? And she's like, oh, I cry the whole time. And I'm like, oh, good, good, good. I mean, just like every time I tell her that I'm crying about something, she cackles at me. And oh, I guess it's because she's fun already dealt with her like the trauma of this scene, like in edits and writing it, that now she can laugh about it. Meanwhile, the rest of us are like dying.
We're still suffering, so it's yeah fine.
But it's fine. But yeah, but I remember how that scene was written, and even like where she was just like allowing them basically to like go through all of her memories and allowing her to relive, you know, like, so she, I mean, like, she's basically like giving herself over to this, this whole process. So it's not even like she wants to fight it. She's just like, you know what? I accept it. Like dealing with Sorsha's death, or not Sorsha. Oh my God. Wow. Not, well, Sorsha, yes, but not Sorsha in this particular scene, but Nehemia's death and, you know, all this, like, reliving all of these things.
Right.
Because, like, at one point, they, like, they're whipping her, too. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. So, like, in this, dreamscape, it didn't really happen. And, right, exactly. So, yeah, it was, that was heavy. That was really heavy.
That whole, I think it's chapter 54. It gets to you, and then you have the end where it again parallels. This is one of my favorite things that we see throughout the series, is how many times Sarah mimics other scenes that she's done, but like twists them just enough so that they're like even more powerful. But it's very similar to the scene in Throne of Glass where she's fighting Cain and it's going horribly wrong. And then Kale tells her of all people to get up. And that's kind of one of the reasons why she's able to get her shit together. But the people telling her to get up this time are, you know, it's not Kale, it's not anyone who judges her, like it's her family and Nehemia and all of these, and Sam and all of these people that she thought would hate her in the afterlife, who are like still on her side, still on her team, and kind of reminding her that like she's not alone, which sounds, you know, cliche, but at the end of the day, I think is like the most important thing that we can keep in mind for ourselves, and especially for Aelin. It's just, it's so emotional. The fact that she has little baby Aelin, this little princess who she claims died baby in a river, Aelin, telling her to get up. I'm just like, oh my God. Like, was I supposed to emerge from that unscathed? Because I didn't.
Was that also like was that also the moment where we get baby Dorian too?
No. Wait, well, it was actually, yes, it was, because it talks about
because we get the whole, like, we get that whole scene. Because, like, we were talking about, like, in the last episode, we were talking about the way that the king pays attention to then Selena's brow all the time.
Right.
And in that scene, there's also the moment where she feels the pressure at her brow, like, inside of her head and stuff. So, anyways, but I remember, because it also comes up again in a later book, where it's Aelin, Adian, and Dorian at this dinner table while, like, they were there on, like, a royal visit or something. And they were, and I've, like, felt,
Dorian.
I was like, oh my God, because he eats like a princess or something like that. I don't remember what they said, but I was like, oh my God, you leave Dorian alone.
Like a fine lady.
A fine lady. That's what...
Ugh.
And he was just like, I eat like a prince.
Oh my God. It's so cute. But then I also, that scene is again so killer because we know that, you know, one of the motifs throughout the books and the reason why her friendship with Aelin is, or with Rowan is so important is because, like, Aelin just wants friends. And then, and so she says, she tells Dorian, despite making fun of him this entire trip, she's like, you could be my friend. And he's like, I already have a friend. His name's Kale. Like,
even then, I didn't hate him then.
Imagine, like, imagine being overlooked in favor of, like, baby Kale. Not even, like, mature Kale, but, like, juvenile Kale. Like, I would perish too, Aelin. I also would go find a bridge and simply contemplate my life and my existence. I don't even know what I would do in that situation. But, like, how harsh. Like, I feel like kids are usually more roundabout in the way that they communicate. Then again, I have almost no experience with kids, so I could be totally wrong. But the fact that Dorian's just like, no, fuck you.
Well, but here's the thing. Like, I mean, to be honest, as someone from an early childhood background development, it's a lot of the times it's just them being honest with one another. And of course, like, your feelings get hurt and stuff like that. But a lot of the times you can trust kids to be really blunt and, like, straightforward and honest. And a lot of the times it's not like there's not always malicious intent behind the things that they say.
Yeah.
But yes, yes. I mean, as an adult reading that, you're like, oh my God. So mean.
Shots fired.
But at the same time, he's just like genuinely like, no, that's my friend. Fuck you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's fine. It's fine. But yeah, like, I mean, again, heavy as fuck. But at the same time, we have a nice counterbalance with flower sniffing wyverns and aww, Rowan being a terrible teacher. And
oh gosh, he really is the worst. So, so I'm reading Empire of Storms right now. We both are, and we're not going to spoil anything, but I think the fact that we've established that in Air of Fire that Rowan is such a terrible teacher, but then we have moments in Empire of Storms where he's kind of forced to take on that teacher role again, and I just find it even funnier because, like, we know now that he's not a good teacher, at least not for Aelin, but he still has to step into that mentor role, mm-hmm, even though he's, like, not very good at it.
He's fucking over
it.
I
just think that is, like, the quintessential, like, again, going back to our metaphor of, like, the service industry. It's exactly when you, like, explicitly tell your manager, like, I don't want to do this task. I am not good at this task. Make someone else do it. And they're like, okay, yep, gotcha. Writing that down. And then the next week you find yourself, like, scheduled for whatever task you've just said you can't do. And you're like, are you fucking kidding me? So yeah, poor Rowan, but we love him.
Who, by the way, I know that, I don't know if I've mentioned this in a previous episode or not, but I would like to keep reiterating it in any possible time. I know that there are a lot of questions that people have had about Rowan in particular, like his character, like, was he inspired by anything? And I can proudly say that he was inspired by Legolas. That is all.
Which is so funny to me because, like, although he, like, physically, like, his physical attributes very much remind me of Legolas, he actually does not remind me that much of Legolas. It's admittedly been...
Well, and that's the, like, thing. No, here's the thing. I think that it's not necessarily carbon copy Legolas.
No.
I know, but what I mean to say is, like, I think that when I say this, I mean how Sarah would want Legolas in her life. like I feel like it would just be like, I mean, let's not forget Sarah had a cutout of Orlando Bloom as Legolas in her bedroom, still to this day still owns this cardboard cutout of Legolas. He has marks on his face from when she used to, like, kiss on him with lip gloss on and stuff. Like, trust me when I say I think it's more like amazing, a romanticized version of Legolas, yeah, is Rowan.
Maybe his physical attributes were given.
Because obviously Legolas in Lord of the Rings did not have tattoos on his face. And
no, he did not. I just meant, like, his silver hair.
Oh, yeah.
Ancient.
And being broody and wearing hoods all the time. Mm-hmm. And archery.
So maybe she just, it's like a little Legolas nod.
I mean, it could be. I don't feel like it's like 100% Legolas, but I feel like inspired for the same reason that Lucien, who was inspired by Jamie Fraser, is not clearly not a Scottish Highlander wearing kilts.
Sadly, I would be here for him wearing.
I know, but sadly, sadly,
it's true.
Anyway,
it's fine.
So
one of these days, we're gonna get like a crossover, but not like a crossover, like an alternate universe, an AU, where they all wear like Scottish Highlander outfits.
I mean, the best thing that I have right now is just Helion. I mean, that's the best thing I've got going for me. So if anybody's going to wear a kilt, it'll be him. So
that's true.
That's fine. Well, that's fine. I will accept this gift that she is willing to give me. Anyway.
All
again,
right.
Also
moving
not thrown a glass.
No, we're really bad at this. It's fine. Okay, so obviously, Air of Fire is a book that is just like absolutely packed with information. Like, it is appalling to me that people find it boring, because I'm like, how is it boring? Like, you're learning so much, it seems like every single page. So which of the major reveals was the most shocking to us? Because there are quite a few. Do you want me to go first?
Yeah, I mean, just because I feel like thinking back to when I first read this series, I already, you know, I mean, we knew about Aelin, you know, before the book started, really. Mm-hmm. But I already had my thoughts about it. So, like, and then, of course, we knew about Dorian's magic. So, I mean, anyways, but go ahead.
I think that for me, it was two moments. The first is that we learn that frickin' Arabin has had the word key this entire time. Like, that is terrifying, because from what we have seen of Arabin, like, we're in trouble.
We in danger.
Like, it's just, like, super... that's just, like, I can't imagine a worse person for that to, like, fall into the hands of. Like, obviously, aside from Arwen, that would, you know, be big bad. But, like, other than him, like, fucking Arabin. So, yeah, that was really scary to me. Just, like, knowing that this man who is so conniving and so wicked has this force of immeasurable power. Rough stuff. It freaked me out. And then the second was the fact that Sorsha was Ren's informant in the castle. I did not see this coming when I first read the book, like, for the first time. And even still, like, I see the pieces where I'm like, oh, of course, like, I, you know, Sarah builds it up by having Sorsha write these letters to her quote-unquote friend. But even still, she is so, like, unassuming, which I guess makes her the perfect spy. That it's like, and she's so committed to Dorian, you know, she's not a spy who hates Adderland. She loves Dorian so much. And so the fact that she's the one who's been feeding Ren all of this information just, like, fucked me up. Like, that moment where the king is like, he says something about the true traitor in the castle, and everybody's like, well, that's Adian. And Sorsha's like, it's me.
JK.
Yeah. Like, we're all like, of course it would be Adian. Like, no shit. Of course. And then it turns out to be Sorsha. You're just, like, that moment of absolute dread. Like, my stomach falls every single time I relive that scene. Even though I know, like, it still is agonizing.
Well, I mean, I will say that one thing that did, and I mean, in the same vein here, it wasn't like a, oh my God, like, gasp, but, like, I remember the first time I read it, and Kale, from Kale's perspective, he realizes that Adian has one of those black stone rings.
Ooh.
And so, like, I was like, oh no, like, yeah. he's a zombie man. And then, like, he, like, throws it off, and he's just like, actually, this is a fake. And I was like, oh, okay, good. I remember that. But also, like, I remember one of the things that I always, even with rereads, that I always forget is, like, that whole scene from Crown of Midnight when Aelin goes to save Kale, and like the rebel, like she's going to go meet Archer and the rebels essentially. And I keep forgetting that Ren and Murtaugh were there.
Yeah.
And so like every time that gets brought up again, like when we're reading Air of Fire, I'm like, oh shit. Like, that's right. You know, she almost killed him.
The series feels so split. So like even though we're reading them like literally back to back, like as soon as I finish one, I pick up the next book. It really does feel like The Assassin's Blade, Throne of Glass, and Crown of Midnight are like their own trilogy, and then the last four or five are their own thing. Mm-hmm. Like it really does feel like there's that divide. So everything that happens in the second, I'm like, this does not connect to the third and fourth and so on, except obviously it does. So
before Hoff and after Hoff.
It's BRW before Rowan Whitethorn and ARW after Rowan Whitethorn. These are the two time periods.
It's true. I mean, but again, if you think about it too, like, because of course we're on Selena in the first two books and then we're Aelin from there on, which by the way, for those who are new here, I can't tell you how many times I've had to edit out in the episode me calling Selena Aelin, because it's just, it's so hard to remove, like, you know, especially for those of us that have been deep in this series for as long as we have. But I guess to some extent, like if you're new and you didn't know that Selena was Aelin, and if you've heard about Aelin and Rowan, Aelin and people, like, I think that it's, that you wouldn't have noticed that it's the same. It's the same character per se, because I feel like all like the fan art and all the fan like memes and stuff that have come out since those books have come out, it's all been Aelin. I don't see a lot of Selena, but that's because I'm not on Tumblr.
Not clearly. Really. I mean, I don't really see very much.
Oh, okay, honestly, good.
These days, I don't see very much Throne of Glass, which makes me really glad that we're doing this reread because it deserves more hype.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, so let's wrap up this episode by telling our listeners why Air of Fire is our favorite book in the series, because it is our favorite book in the series. So, Steph?
I will actually keep this pretty brief. I think that the main reason that Air of Fire is one of my all-time favorite Sarah books is because it wasn't romance heavy, which is really weird to say, coming from me. But I think that because of that, like all of the stages of development for each of the characters in this book, regardless of who they were, with the exception, of course, of Dorian, who technically was going through a little romance in this, but like, but seeing all of their development, you're able to focus solely on that. But like, there was just so much information and awesomeness to gobble up. I just love Sarah's brain. And I think that even though I am obsessed with like all of her like romancey things and of course like her bedroom stuff in the books, like I still like this book and even like Air of Fire, oh my gosh, House of Earth and Blood, it's again the same thing where like you're like, yes, romance is great, but like there's so much other awesomeness happening that you don't miss it. So I feel like it's just like such a well-written, well-rounded book. Like it feels like a complete series in and of itself, like in just that one book. So anyways, that's my answer. What about you?
I think that, you know, it's kind of the same thing where I think we were just awarded all of the sides, all of the different facets and faces that Selena / Aelin wears. And I think you just, like, you see a depth to this character that I feel like you rarely see in characters anywhere, like in any books. Like, I think it was, you know, emerging from Air of Fire, like, you feel like you really understand her. I felt like I was right there with her. Like, I've never gone through anything nearly as traumatic as what Aelin has gone through, and yet you can feel just how poignant that grief is. And so, you know, like, I agree, I love the romance, I gobble that shit up, but I think there's at least for me, there's always kind of been like a distance with some of the romance. Like, I think it's just hard to kind of like look at that and, you know, because especially in Sarah's books, they're highlighted by these like incredible, you know, declarations or wars or whatever, which definitely heightens the romance. But I think also, at least for me, separates it from reality a little bit. And then you have books like Air of Fire where they're not romance heavy, but they're people heavy. And it's, you know, like maybe you've never had to watch someone die in front of you, but we all know what grief feels like. We all know what guilt feels like. And she just like dives into that in a way that is so raw and unfiltered. Like I felt like a different person walking out of Air of Fire. Like I always feel, I don't know, like a little, I don't know, like staticky is like the best way to describe it. Like there's just a weird energetic flow.
Yeah.
After reading Air of Fire, where you're like, shit, I had to confront something in myself that I didn't even know existed while reading that book. God damn. And I think that that's like, you know, this is the book that I think evidences just how excellent of an author Sarah is, because she can do the romance very well and do this part very well. And like, neither of those things are easy, but the fact that she has a mastery over both is like, dude, awesome. Right. Awesome brain.
And it doesn't feel like you're trying too hard to make it something it should be or that it isn't. So like, I mean, again, I think that it was just like such an organic flow.
Yeah.
And part of the stories, because I feel like that's another thing when you have like a long-standing series, once you hit like the middle book, it kind of just feels like filler. It doesn't always feel, and it's not to say that it's like a terrible thing to have, but like a lot of times you just feel like you're standing still, like you're not really it's not doing much to move the story. But yeah, like I think that this was like the book that like everything took off in, whereas like I think that I feel like Throne of Glass, for example, the first book, could have probably been a standalone book if you had added a, like a little bit more from Crown of Midnight maybe in it.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Crown of Midnight is bridging the gap of now Throne of Glass to Air of Fire. But like, I feel like this was just like, it's just solid. Just solid writing, solid story, solid everything. And, you know, if anybody says that they don't like Air of Fire at all, you're entitled to your wrong opinion, you know?
Yeah.
Everybody has one every now and again. and that this just might be the one that you have a wrong opinion about. But it's fine. Nobody can tell me any different. So I love it. Solid read.
Yeah.
It just gets better every time we read it. I feel like I get something new out of it every single time. It does. So.
And, you know, it's like I actually end up loving the characters more as opposed to, like, hating them, which, like, again, Kale. This isn't a spoiler. But, like, I hate Adian with every reread, like, more and more.
Well, that's Kale. Adian is now, like...
This guy.
Adian has now put his horse in the race in this.
Congratulations, Adian.
Like... Kale used to like win by a landslide and now Adian is slowly taking the lead. But Adian is fine in this book. But regardless, yeah, I love it. And basically no one could tell me any different about Aelin's character either. So
she's amazing.
Aelin and Manon supremacy forever.
Always.
Behind Rowan, but then yes, it's fine. Actually, I will say I think that Abraxas is my favorite character of all time. Like,
all right.
Sorry.
You know what? That tracks.
I'm just saying. Brilliant. Yeah. I feel this sweet little baby. That sweet little baby. My sweet little scarred baby. Anyway. All right. Sorry. Okay. So cool. We managed to keep it at an hour. This is actually very impressive considering the fact that I wanted to shout from the rooftops my love for Rowan. But there's more Rowan to come.
Mission accomplished. That's true. We're not done with him yet.
No, it's just the beginning. Hope everybody buckles up for the next couple of episodes, because it's going to just be Rowan is the answer to every question. Okay, cool. So thanks so much for tuning in to this episode, everybody. And for those that are reading along, thank you for joining us on this read along. Next week's episode is going to be for Queen of Shadows, which technically is book 4 or 5, depending on the order in which you've read things. And of course, it's just going to be me talking about Rowan the whole time. So I hope you guys are as excited as I am. Exactly. But make sure to subscribe, follow us on all socials at Mastastic on Instagram. We have our website, mastastic.com. You can also tune into our Patreon, which is patreon.com/phantomtastic. And I think I've covered it all. And Ava?
And remember, don't let the hard days win.
That's right, unless you're Kale and or Adian. Anywho, catch you guys next week.